From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Vice President Mike Pence will be in Calexico today. There are some 200 asylum seekers from Central America who arrived over the weekend. They aren't being processed. It's uncertain whether they will be. So let's start there in my conversation with the political junkie, Ken Rudin. He's back from vacation, and he's joining us as he does every week for conversation. Hi, Ken. Glad to have you back.
Thanks, Beth. Glad to be back. Well, I'm not glad to be back, but glad to be on the show.
Well, I'm sure the buzz in the Beltway today is about the correspondence dinner and the comedian Michelle Wolf. But can you hold that thought for a minute? Can we start with this California story?
Well, if you're talking about what's going on the border, yeah, it's a big story. And it's, you know, something, these caravans have been going on for a while. They've just never got the kind of attention it's gotten now because Donald Trump, from day one of his presidency, has been talking about immigration and people coming here illegally, and how Mexico is bringing us rapists and people convicted of crimes and things like that. And he's been talking, I guess he watches Fox and Friends a lot, but he's been following this caravan that's been coming up from the Honduras and Guatemala through Mexico, and now that they're at the border at Tijuana. It's something that has divided the country, and certainly we know where the president stands on this.
They're also in an area where some of the wall is being constructed. And if you're watching social media at all, some of the scenes and the stories and the pictures are so powerful that I think the story is going far beyond the United States at this point.
It is powerful. Those pictures are absolutely very powerful. And whether they, I don't know how much they will convince one side or the other in this country, because the divisions, I mean, we saw that during the Dreamers debate, that a lot of people felt, quite a lot of people felt that it wasn't worth shutting down the government for people who were here, who came here illegally, even though the process by which these children were brought here is, you know, seems just very unfair to single them out. But the divisions in the country are real. Donald Trump's election proves it, but I agree with you completely. These pictures of the people who have sacrificed everything to avoid persecution, to reach their dream, it's just very moving pictures. It does not mean that the divisions in this country, the debate in this country, has gone away.
So there has been an announcement that the port of entry had reached capacity. If the vice president is going to be there, explain to me what that will be, more than a photo opportunity. Really, Ken, what's the purpose?
Well, you know, I mean, that's a very good question. I don't know. I mean, first of all, we've talked about the fact that everybody has known for the longest time that these people are coming. And actually, there's fewer people at the border than I expected. I think originally it was between 1,500 and 2,000,
right,
who started this trek up through through Mexico. And now it's maybe 175, 200 people who have reached the border. But if the U.S. process has been overloaded, and then obviously the government could have had more people down there trying to do these processes. But the thing is that for the most part, these people may not, as you said in your introduction, these people may not get through the process. They may not wind up in anything other than detention centers in Texas. And I don't know if Pence being there is part of a show. You know, I always think of him going to that Indianapolis football game where he went there for 2 seconds, saw the predictable football players taking a knee, and then left immediately afterwards. Mm. I don't know if Pence is there for a photo opportunity or what, but again, it's too much politics and people not realizing that these are real lives we're talking about here.
Meanwhile, there were reports at the president's rally over the weekend of people in the audience chanting Nobel, Nobel, the suggestion of a Nobel Prize for the work that's been done on bringing together North and South Korea. It seems there are some tangible results. The Nobel aspect can certainly be debated, but there actually might be, like I said, tangible changes in history out of the talks.
Well, yeah, the first of all, regarding the Nobel stuff, I mean, you know, it was very controversial when Barack Obama was given the Nobel Peace Prize while there were indiscriminate bombings going on from drones and things like that. But we'll take the Nobel part out of it. This is remarkable what's going on in Korea. And, You know, maybe if you want to say that Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump may be among the two most unstable leaders in the world, and yet they're talking about, I mean, they whatever they've done seems to move the country towards, or the region closer towards peace, is just it's something. I mean, if you think of what happened a year ago when we were talking about World War III and Kim was threatening nuclear war against, you know, the U.S. and everything, and now we're talking about denuclearization. It's, I mean, you don't know what's real and what's fantasy and what's a Saturday Night Live skit, because, I mean, look, right now, you know that the North and South have talked, and you know that is a promising thing, and you know that Kim, the leader of North Korea, and Trump, the leader of the United States, may be meeting as well. We don't know what's real, though. You don't know if it's promises we've heard before from Pyongyang. You know, we don't know if it's just propaganda. We just don't know. But if anything, you have to be hopeful, and you have to be, you know, you have to think that hopefully this will lead to something, but you just don't know. And so it's, you know, you and I talked about all the, you know, the students protesting about gun laws in the country and whether they'll make a difference. You don't know what's going to happen, because we've seen terrible things happening before. We've seen these, and regarding Korea, we've seen these promises before of denuclearization, and suddenly it became nothing more than a bluff and a piece of propaganda that disappeared immediately. So, you know, it's,
hey, Ken, you know
what I'm trying to say is that I'm encouraged, but I just don't know.
Let's talk the day or two after the November elections and then find out if there are results from the students' voices, because then we will know something. We will know what happened at the ballot box. Supposedly, in a couple weeks, we're going to know whether there is a summit that happens with the president and the North Korean leader. So I agree with you. There are things we don't know right now, but we may see some events in the not-so-distant future that will tell us more.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And the fact that, I mean, the fact is we're talking about, we don't know what time frame we're talking about, you know, getting rid of the nuclear weapons from the peninsula. So again, yes, I agree with you completely. There's a lot we don't know, but I guess the word is so far, so good, promising so far, right?
You're listening to Ken Rudin, the political junkie, refreshed and returned from vacation last week. I know that you have attended many correspondents' dinners, and I know there have been irreverent speakers in the past, but I don't think you attended this one this weekend from the YouTube clip or whatever you watched and heard from her. Ken, what's your take on what happened over the weekend?
Well, you know, something is funny. I always think of, well, I was at the 2000, I mean, I've been to many, yes. And as a matter of fact, I loved it when I was there. And since I stopped going, I hate it. So I don't know if I'm hypocritical or what, but I don't like the fact that the media are hobnobbling and schmoozing with the politicians they cover. I just don't like that thing. When you hire somebody like Michelle Wolf, who's known to cross the line over and over again in the things she says about Trump and public figures, and then suddenly people are stunned that, oh my goodness, I can't believe how far she went and how, look, I've never seen anything like this. But I do remember, though, that we were so outraged what Stephen Colbert did regarding President Bush in 2006, how he attacked the media and he attacked President Bush in very personal terms. And everybody said, oh, my God, we'll never have that again. And I think the next year we had Rich Little, you know, which was so awful. I mean, he was making jokes about Ike and Mamie Eisenhower. That's how old his material was. So I don't know what the compromise should be.
Wait, let me back you up. Tell me what lines were crossed, because I guess there's a scale of offensiveness, and certainly she was tipping the far end of it, but Colbert did the same thing in terms of the offensiveness at the time. So I'm not talking so much about Michelle Wolf, but what's the boundary? Is it being vulgar? Is it hitting very shots, places we don't go? Is it swearing? Is it attacking Sarah Sanders, for example? What to you feels like the boundary?
Well, see, here's the thing, though. I don't care if it, look, some people thought she was very funny. Some people thought she was very obscene.
And I think in many cases, she was both.
She was both, but But here's what bugs me the most. It's people like Andrea Mitchell and Peter Baker of the New York Times suddenly saying that how dare she say these things. Andrea Mitchell is demanding that we apologize to Sarah Sanders. The thought of apologizing to Sarah Sanders, somebody who stands in front of the electorate every day and lies and spreads, you know, repeats lies from the White House with no compunction at all. And given what President Trump has said about women's faces and looks, and the thought that a seemingly innocent crack about Sarah Sanders, first of all, it wasn't about her looks at all. Everybody's saying how she attacked her weight and her looks. It wasn't that at all. But the point is, the fact that where everybody's so suddenly, so, you know, protective of Sarah Sanders and President Trump, and they feel the need to apologize for Michelle Wolf, that's what you get. You hire somebody like Michelle Wolf, that's what you get. And to the thought of apologizing for that, you know, then just don't have these kind of comedians. They knew who Michelle Wolf was before they hired her. And now everybody's so, it's like everybody's just so running around like chickens with their heads cut off saying, oh my goodness, I had no idea what this was going to be like. And then afterwards at the post-dinner parties, journalists were going, walking over to Sarah Sanders and apologizing. To me, that's just, oh my goodness, come on. I mean, that's... Get over yourself, folks. It just seemed just too bizarre.
Hey, Ken, there are
but
some.
Yes, it was.
There are some
but it
parts.
It was obscene. A lot of it was obscene, yes.
There are some parts of her speech that we couldn't play on the air, quite a bit
in fact.
But on the subject of media complicity, and it is interesting about the apologies afterwards to Sarah Sanders and whether there was some politicking going on there as well. But I did pull out part of what Michelle Wolf said near the end about the relationship between the media and President Trump, at least her take of it.
I think what no one in this room wants to admit is that Trump has helped all of you. He couldn't sell steaks or vodka or water or college or ties or Eric. But he has helped you. He's helped you sell your papers and your books and your TV. You helped create this monster and now you're profiting off of him. And if you're gonna profit off of Trump, you should at least give him some money because he doesn't have any.
And that, to give a little backstory, was her dig for the night, saying he wants to be rich, and her criticism was he really isn't.
Well, you know something? I'm glad you played that clip because basically there's a lot of truth to that. I remember the chairman of CBS said a long time ago that, I don't know if he's good for the country, but Donald Trump is certainly good for CBS and the fact that the media can't live without him. Now, he's the president of the United States, and I guess the media is supposed to cover what he does, including his daily tweets and his daily outbursts. But Michelle Wolf is right. The media, they feed off each other. Trump hates the press, but needs the press. The press seems to hate Trump, but they need Donald Trump to keep their ratings up. I mean, how many times did we see, you know, a conversation on CNN all about Donald Trump, all about, even though they have such contempt for Trump, but at the same time, they can't stop talking about him. So I think of all the things that Michelle Wolf said, one is probably the only thing you could play in its entirety, and two, there's some truth to it. So, you know, it's a relationship that is almost sad. But look, the media is supposed to cover the president, and I don't think whether it's an incendiary president or a controversial president or even a benign president, and that's what the media is supposed to do. And I think they're doing their job. But Michelle Wolf did make some good points there.
All right. I thought it was worth talking about, too. Thank you, Ken. We didn't even get to Speaker Paul Ryan firing the chaplains. So let's make sure we hit that next week and find out whatever the rest of that story is. OK.
And the great vetting of Ronny Jackson. There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
That's true,
exactly.
Too. All right, Ken, get back to work, would you?
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm going to go back and listen to Michelle Wolf's greatest hits.
Oh, gosh. That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. You can find more information, a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Capital Public Radio.